Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 452nd episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is a legendary Hollywood actress and character who is now in her 67th year in the business. A six-time Oscar nominee and six-time Emmy nominee with one Oscar and one Emmy on her mantelpiece, her credits include 1955's The Trouble with Harry, her acting debut, which was directed by Alfred Hitchcock, 1956's Around the World in 80 Days, which won the Best Picture Oscar, 1960's Ocean's 11, also starring the Rat Pack, of which she was an honorary member, 1960's The Apartment, which won the Best Picture Oscar, 1961's The Children's Hour, in which she starred opposite Audrey Hepburn, 1977's The Turning Point, 1979's Being There, 1983's Terms of Endearment, which won the Best Picture Oscar, and for which she won the Best Actress Oscar, 1989's Steel Magnolias, 1990's Postcards from the Edge, 2011's Bernie, and many more. The recipient of the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Chaplin Award in 1995, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association's Cecil B. DeMille Award in 1998, the AFI Life Achievement Award in 2012, and a Kennedy Center honor in 2013, she made her name in one apartment and can now be seen at the age of 88 in another. Namely, in the second episode of the second season of Hulu's Emmy-nominated comedy series Only Murders in the Building, the great Shirley MacLaine. Over the course of a conversation which we recorded during the 2015 TCM Classic Film Festival in Hollywood, just before the establishment of this podcast, MacLaine and I talked about her childhood growing up with her kid brother, Warren Beatty, and how she was discovered by Hal Wallace. What it was like making classic films with the likes of Hitchcock, Billy Wilder, William Wyler, John Schlesinger, Vincent Minnelli, Herbert Ross, Mike Nichols, Bob Fosse, Hal Ashby, James L. Brooks, Richard Linklater, and so many others. What led her to the New Age worldview with which she is so closely associated? What she makes of today's Hollywood and its stars, plus much more. And so without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Thank you for making time to do this. Mm-hmm. And I just was curious to begin with, and it maybe doesn't seem like it's that important in the grand scheme of things, but how did Shirley MacLaine Beatty become Shirley MacLaine? What was the evolution? How did that happen?
Well, they called me Shirley Beatty, Shirley Batty, Shirley Beauty. I said, I want to go with my mother.
Mm-hmm. And that was early on you decided?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was about 17 mm-hmm. in the chorus of a show.
And I also am curious what your theory is. You know, what was it about your family that two great actors can come out of one family?
I think it was probably disappointment that we were witnessing in the parents.
Really?
They all wanted to do those things, but sometimes, and to and some extent, their lives were a disappointment because they didn't do it. They were busy raising us.
Was there interest in acting as well or something else?
Oh, yes. Mother was a dramatics major. And Dad was a very fine musician. And once he told me he had wanted to run away and join a circus. So
There you go.
I just became the circus, and he didn't have to run away.
Now, when you were a kid, was acting always the ambition, or were there other things before that?
Yes, I thought seriously about being a physicist because I was so interested in metaphysics since I was 10.
Wow. And
so all this thing that I write about in my books is not new.
What sparked that? Was there an incident or something you read?
Some past life thing.
Really?
In which I was interested and successfully had figured out, you know, time and that we are not alone and the fact that we all live many, many times, something like that. And I always felt that.
And as far as some of the other stuff, like the UFOs, for instance, I read that you read a report at 18 about Truman that kind of sparked your interest?
No, I was there in Arlington, Virginia, 1952, when the whole UFO squadron buzzed the White House and the Capitol.
So you saw this?
Yeah.
And that, did it scare you? Did it excite you? What was
No, I knew what they were. Yeah. And when I saw, I didn't know where they were from.
Yeah.
But as Truman and General Stanfield Turner, I think, he directed him to come on the television and radio and say to people, all they have to know is they're not from Russia.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting? They could be from the Pleiades, but if they're not from Russia, then that's what they want to know. My God.
So you mentioned in your teens starting, I guess, acting. And what was the how did you end up in New York understudying on Broadway? What was the secret?
Because I was a dancer, and you have to go to New York if you want to be a dancer and successful. That's all.
And as far
as... I wasn't that good, by the way, really.
As a dancer?
No. I could flash and dash them, but I was not that good. Not as good a ballet dancer
really?
At all as I was the other kind.
Mm-hmm. As far as the pajama game, how did you come to be a part of it? And if you can share, I'm sure you've had to do it more times than you want to remember, but what was the sequence of events that sort of led from being the understudy to catching Hal Wallace's attention?
Well, it wasn't up to me. The star hurt her ankle. I was on, and he was there.
And did he immediately...
Yeah, he came... You're talking about Hal?
Yeah.
He came backstage and signed me. Actually took me to Sardi's. First good meal I'd eaten in days, years, years.
Had the movies been and even a thought prior to that?
No.
Not at all.
I remember Shirley Jones was in the chorus of Me and Juliet with me. That was the show before Pajama Game. Mm-hmm. And she had told me and the rest of the chorus people that she was going to L.A. to do this musical called Oklahoma. By the way, I had done the subway circuit of Oklahoma when I was 16.
Really?
And I played the center postcard girl. So I sort of knew what Oklahoma was. Therefore, I knew what 80 Annie was. And I said to Shirley, when you get to California, ask, was it Fred Zinnemann who directed mm-hmm. them? Ask Fred Zinnemann if he needs an 80 Annie. Isn't that something?
That's unbelievable. So so now your first movie, Trouble with Harry, is, I wonder what your mindset was when you're going into that. Did you feel that you were ready, you were confident? I mean, you get so many varying accounts from people who worked with Hitchcock that he made them feel better or he made them feel worse. I wonder what your...
No, he made me his eating companion. Because he knew that, I don't know if he knew or not, but I was from the chorus with no money. And I had free meals if I ate with Hitchcock. And I gained 25 pounds. The head of the studio called me and said, you're wrecking your career before it even starts. They couldn't match the you know, over shoulders because I was 25 pounds heavier 3 weeks later. Anyway, with me, I was not the tall, thin, blonde goddess type. So I was not influenced by his opinions of what he wanted to do to blonde goddess types.
Right. So a year later, again, just a year after starting in the movies, you're part of the, I think to that point, the most star-studded movie ever, right, all around the world in 80 days.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of pinching yourself, or are you already accustomed to being, you know, a Hollywood star at that point?
Well... You kind of never get accustomed. At the same time that you feel this is your destiny, you're in alignment with it, it's nothing unusual. I had not been on location. Well, yes, I had. I'd been in New Hampshire and Vermont with Hitch, but not in Japan and all around the world. And by the way, the sound man on that picture became a friend of mine for the next 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, did you ever expect the movie would win Best Picture at the Oscars?
Well, no. Well, after I saw it.
Yeah,
yes,
right, right.
But Mike Todd, you know what he was. He was, it was hard to get a beat on anything. He was always 3 years ahead of schedule,
right.
And he didn't really... sort of flew by the seat of his pants, so you never knew what was really happening.
with Some Came Running, I know that's your first nomination and was also kind of an introduction to this group of folks that you would start hanging out with a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to be the sole female in, essentially in the
role? I don't know.
Back?
It was a kind of a... I was their girl Friday. There was no sex at all, although later I had kind of a crush on Dean. But I don't know. I cleaned up after them. They could trust me with anything. I never asked them for anything. It was fascinating, wasn't it, that I was that? I don't know why.
Well,
and I laughed at everything Dean said because I thought it was so funny.
And you seem hard to shock.
That's true. That's very true.
So was the apartment, though, in some ways the best part that you had when that final up to that point, that in the sense that I've always felt like you can navigate between tragedy and comedy better than anybody, and here's a part that has that built in and you could run with it, right?
Yeah, but you know, when we did the apartment, we only had 29 pages of script.
How's that?
Well, because Billy and Izzy didn't know yet what the chemistry between Jack and me would be. And the gin game is in because I was learning to play gin rummy from Dean and Frank and a couple of other nefarious people. And he put the gin game in because I did that every weekend.
And was Shut Up and Deal a
improvised? That's probably what I said.
Really?
Yeah.
I was wondering that. That's amazing. And when you're making that movie, did you have any... I mean, obviously Billy Wilder was already Billy Wilder, but so did you have an expectation that this movie was going to be a especially important one, especially great one, let alone go on and win Best Picture?
Yes, we knew, we knew Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And although this was a comedy and he had just finished a couple of other really dramatic ones, you know, he was such a science of comedy person and knew... And Izzy. We knew Izzy. And yes, we knew we were making something important.
And were you, when you saw that performance, was that, I get the sense that that may have been the first time in the movies up to that point that you were really totally pleased with what you had done? Is that fair to say?
No, I pretty well liked everything I did. And then never saw it again.
Except the one that you guys reunited for, right? You weren't such a big fan of Irma LaDuce, right?
I thought it should have been a musical.
Really?
That's basically it. But he was intimidated by the music because he didn't have complete control.
And so even when you were nominated for it, I read some...
Why I was nominated for that thing. I don't know.
That's
why.
It's funny because I read that you said that and that you didn't want to win for that one.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well...
I was so grateful.
What's up?
Although I had a beautiful dress to wear.
What is up with all the Jacks in your life? Is it a kind of a cosmic thing?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Let's just for the people that may listen. Jack Lemmon, of course. Jack Gilardi, your agent for all those years. Jack Nicholson, Jack Black, and Bernie. It's crazy.
It is. Isn't that something?
And just you seem
it's
to
a good
get
thing I didn't have an affair with Jack Kennedy, or that would have been one.
Was that a possibility? Did you?
No, I was the one he talked to. He was not like that with me.
Yeah, I was also thinking that, you know, when you sign on to do the Children's Hour, were you thinking to yourself, you know, how's this gonna be made? I mean, this is coming out at a time when husband and wife couldn't be shown in the same bed together, and here you're dealing with.
I know.
It's kind of crazy.
And Willie honestly did compromise it. He cut out some wonderful scenes of me ironing Karen's hair, making her clothes in nice packages, things like that, that were showing the real love that Martha had for for Karen, and I think he got frightened. Mm-hmm. And I think the movie suffered from that. And Philip Scheuer, who was the film critic for the LA Times, I remember the headline of his review, "The Lesbian Said the Better." Isn't that awful?
And here we are. It's, you know, in some ways things have changed a lot, in some ways not a lot.
Of course they've changed.
But you think it's
much more honest.
Yeah. As a dancer, was it kind of exciting to get to do, I guess we'll get to Turning Point, but even before that, Sweet Charity, to be able to do that and acquire a theme song must have been kind of
nice. My friends, yeah. That's right.
Does it make it any better to be doing something you enjoy off screen, on screen, or does it actually maybe sap some of the fun?
Well, dancing on screen is difficult because you've done the rehearsal period. Your muscles and everything are used to it. And then you don't shoot it for 6 weeks until 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
And sometimes the muscle memory forgets, and that's the problem.
Bob Fosse as director might have been interesting, though. Was he?
Oh, he was extraordinary. Yeah. Yeah.
In another interview of yours that I read, you kind of suggested that the way you approached acting changed when you saw Jack Nicholson in Five Easy Pieces, and particularly mm-hmm. What happened to you then when you saw it? What did it?
Relaxed, had a more improvisational take to it. Mm-hmm. I was always pretty loose anyway. Mm-hmm. Didn't take it all that seriously mm-hmm. or anything like mm-hmm. that. And when I saw what Jack did with it, with the chicken salad sandwich scene, I thought, yeah, that's okay, that's it. And then when I worked with him, my God, what a pleasure. You never knew what he was going to do, never.
Now, for a few years before the Turning Point, I think it was four, you did not, you had just, I guess, entered your 40s, and you weren't working for those 4 years. I wondered.
Oh, I was doing politics. I was doing McGovern and Bobby Kennedy.
So it wasn't a matter of Hollywood kind of turning on you when you hit middle age, or was it?
It was a little of that, too.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I was filling in the gaps with what else I was interested in.
Yeah.
Sure.
But to come back with the Turning Point must have been a nice middle finger to those people, right?
That was I never thought of it that way. And I loved shooting in New York, and I loved, of course, it was about ballet mm-hmm. and working with Nora Kay. Mm-hmm. Mm.
And do you like your director and co-star
Fair.
On that one?
Fair.
But you, that one, I get the sense that was one of the performances, I think, very rightly, that you're particularly proud of, right?
Yeah, was I nominated for that?
I believe so, and I think you probably should have won.
I don't know.
But anyway, is it different as somebody who's so often funny to play sort of the straight man in being there where you are?
No, no? I loved it.
You loved it?
Well, I was just so enamored of Peter and his ability to sink completely into that character. And I mean, that was like a psychological experience to watch someone who went into schizophrenia willingly.
And how did you keep a straight face?
It was hard. So there for it was a comedy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What's the first, do you remember the first time you heard of Terms of Endearment? How you heard about it? Just what was the first entrance onto your radar?
Jim had done a complete script, sent it to me. I read it. He came to my place in Malibu. He was standing outside the door, and I said, this could be important.
So you knew right away, important
yeah.
that it would be a great movie or that you had a great part that you were
both.
Yeah. And what was the toughest part about it? I mean, you have to, your character.
Him.
Really? he's a handful?
Oh, he's a handful. An absolutely brilliant handful.
Yeah.
But a handful, right.
But even, you know, I'm thinking to have to age as a character 32 years in the course of 2 hours, and I know making it, you're jumping all chronologically.
Oh, that's all about makeup and hair. That's easy.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you talked about some of the wigs and stuff where they're aging. You weren't crazy about the way that they age the character, right, I think?
Yeah, because she was also dyeing her hair. So you had to look at the fact they had to make wigs where
right.
she hadn't had a touch-up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I Polly
yeah.
Platt, right? That was,
oh, yeah. Oh, my God, right.
So when you look back on that experience of making that movie, just do you remember it being a happy time, a difficult time? I mean, it's obviously a emotional, tough movie, tough in the sense that it's a lot of sad things that you're dealing with, but was it, could you enjoy the experience of making it?
Anything with Jack Nicholson is makes me so satisfied, so happy. Oh my God, I wish he'd work again soon.
Yeah. And was Deborah Winger somebody you, did you
get? Talk about a handful. Never mind. Let's not go there.
Really? Well, I bet you probably had to spend more time with her on that than anybody, right? And on the set, on the making of that movie.
More than anybody? I don't know. Maybe her handler had a, I don't know.
Now, when you won the Oscar, I think you gave one of the funniest speeches anybody's given as an acceptance speech. And I just wonder, you know, first of all, was it all the more satisfying that you had to wait as long as you did to win and then win?
No, I would rather have won before and then.
And then, and then part B, why was it another 5 years before you worked again after Terms? Yeah, that's what I was looking
Are
at.
Are you kidding me?
I was surprised because normally they say, you know, the career move is strike.
Well, they always tell you that when you win an Oscar, it can be dooming.
Is that your sense? Did it help or hurt or anything?
I think hurt.
You do?
I think so, because people don't think they should send you a script they're not sure about or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really can be too demanding for the future.
But the one you came back with, Madame Sosatska, was
I loved working with Schlesinger. He was a dreamboat. Yeah.
Fun to play a crazy mother in Postcards from the Edge.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I didn't play Debbie. I played my version of Debbie.
Yeah. If you can step outside of yourself for a second, and what is Shirley MacLaine's greatest strength as an actress, objectively?
Mm-hmm. Probably living in the moment.
And is that just a God-given thing? Because you weren't.
I think so. Yeah. And also probably I don't have restrictions on how I should say stuff or shouldn't talk about this or whatever. I don't have those filters as part of my character. Therefore, I don't have filters with the acting either, don't think.
That makes sense. And when you look at the movies and people in them today, what do you make of it? One thing I came across, and it kind of makes sense that you like Interstellar because that raises some interesting, and you like Jennifer Lawrence, who really reminds me of you.
A lot of people have told me that, and I did meet with her right after she finished doing The Hunger Games, and we had some talks about life and love and the pursuit of happiness stuff. Yes, she's my favorite.
How would you feel if you like she had become a star in the 21st century, where today they're in some of the paparazzi and tabloids and stuff that these guys deal with? She had her phone hacked, where they take her, you know, everything. It's just like,
that's a question.
So the question, I guess, is would you have wanted to even pursue this career if you had had to?
Oh no, I would have beaten them up. I would have gone over there and cracked them over the head with a bottle of scotch or something. I thought that was awful. And would do that. I would react that way.
Any regrets? Is there a role that got away? Is there something?
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Really?
I turned it down. And instead of doing it, I did a thing called Two Loves with Jack Hawkins and Larry Harvey, whom I despised.
And
three people saw the movie. Although never would I have done, given Holly Golightly, what Audrey did. So, you know.
Well, I guess just as the last thing, two-parter, if I may. What's your life like today? Do you still have the hunger that you've always had to act? And then part B, many, many years from now, when all of us are gone, how would you like people to remember the work and everything that you did?
Getting ready to do another movie, working with people on the script. If I can't be creative, I'm in trouble. Writing my own books, and that's probably what I'd like. I would like to be remembered for making it clear that life itself is show business. Everything about what each of us do, we are performing our lives. And we can make a decision how to perform, how to dress, what is the wardrobe, what is the makeup, what is the distribution, what is the financing. You know, we're all doing it every day.
All right, well,
And I think that's a simple concept that I'd like to be remembered for making it clear. You know?
I think you do it better than anybody, so thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks, hon.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your podcast app, and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg. Until next time, thanks for joining us.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.